Welcome to Education 3.0, the new podcast from Kennesaw State University's iTeach Center, where we delve into educational topics like personalized learning, instructional coaching, and the maker movement, and where we get a chance to meet the incredible teachers, administrators, coaches, and students that are out there doing the work every day. All right, so welcome to the podcast, everybody. I have the luxury this afternoon of sitting here with Jamie Cassip.
Hello.
He is the Google Education Evangelist. For those of you that don't know him, I imagine most of our listeners and watchers will know who you are, but thank you so much. Welcome to Atlanta.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I really appreciate you taking the time to sit down and talk to us. Tell us, first off, I think it's so interesting, your title, Chief Educational Evangelist.
Right.
What does that mean? What do you do for Google?
It doesn't mean anything. So it's, you know, a technology term, right? There's lots of people in Silicon Valley that have the evangelist role, right? If you think about the word evangelist, it's about bringing good news. And for me, it's about the good news of education as a silver bullet, about the role that technology can play, about the models that we need to change. And honestly, it was given to me by someone. I was presenting in Michigan somewhere, you know, a generation ago, and the education director for the state of Michigan said, "You're not whatever my old title was.
Right.
You're an evangelist. That's what you should be called." And that's where it came from.
Fantastic. Yeah. Very cool. So as I was preparing for this and reading up, and certainly I've followed you and I've seen you at ISTE and conferences and this and that, I was super intrigued to learn that you have recently started teaching a high school, 10th grade high school classroom. So tell me about that. Is this your first time as a K-12 teacher?
As a K-12 teacher, it is. So I've been teaching before I even started at Google. So I've been teaching graduate classes and college classes at Arizona State University since 2003, 2004. I always loved doing it. And I was part of the team that helped build the school, Phoenix Coding Academy.
Right.
And, you know, it's a little bit about putting your money where your mouth is, kind of thing, which is,
absolutely,
if you need a critical skill, and I say communications is a critical skill, then I should probably do my part to teach kids communication skills. So I teach communication skills, but we did it in a way, obviously I can't be in a classroom every day.
Right.
I would die, but I get to go every couple weeks, every 2 weeks I go and I do a whole day. So I'm teaching 90 kids over three classes for a day. So I'm there all day, and then, excuse me, every 2 weeks we're doing that, and I'm doing it between when school started all the way through May. We're gonna do about 12 to 14 classes about helping them develop their communication skills. And I think, I wanna see where this goes in terms of, I think it's a great skill for 10th graders to go through, because, you know, most of us know, everyone told me that 10th grade is the hardest grade to teach, right? I got all the students, 10th graders are the worst.
Right? Yes, sir.
They know everything.
Right. They're not as afraid as 9th graders.
Right.
But they haven't figured out like 11 and 12.
But they think they know the world.
Right.
And what's great about communication skills is that they realize that they don't know everything. And that you can see when they're like, they're all tough, and then they get up to speak and they're like nervous and scared.
Yeah.
So I think it's a great way to kind of like bring them balance and level them down, because it teaches them how to get feedback, how to look for feedback, so we spent the first couple of classes just finding good presentations. Like, what is a good presentation? Then we spent last week putting together the criteria for what is a good presentation, but they build it, I let them build it.
Right, right?
I'm not gonna show them an evaluation that this is what you should even be evaluated on.
Right.
I wanted them to build what the evaluation will be like. And so they created the criteria that they use. So it's been great. I love it.
Fantastic.
Well, I'm also tired at the end of the day.
Yeah, I'm very familiar with that. I can relate.
Right, right.
Fantastic. So I taught mostly 9th graders for about 15 years, but I did do a couple of years with geometry and U.S. history in 10th grade. So
right.
Here in Georgia. So.
Well, I'm trying to also be lazy, right? Which is, I'm trying to be a good coach and let them do the work.
Right.
I don't want to do the work for them, right? So it's not a lot of lecturing. It's more about letting them find stuff. It's about having them explain why they find something and what they like about it, having them actually do the work. So I put them in teams a lot and let them work together.
That's fantastic. And those are the skills that, of course, they're going to need, whether they're going to college or going to work afterwards, whatever their trajectory takes them. Those are certainly worthwhile skills they'll be able to put to use.
Yeah.
So Fantastic. So one of the questions on our podcast here, our podcast called Education 3.0, and we are, I'm going to tell you a little bit about us if you've talked to David Lockhart.
Mm-hmm.
So we work directly with teachers in K-12 schools on what we're calling personalized learning. That's a lot of what we do. So I started putting out the podcast to talk to our coaches. There's about 53 coaches right now that are all employed, and we're all out in schools around and around the Metro Atlanta area.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of talking about how is coaching different from teaching, and kind of what are some strategies and some skills that you're using to build teacher leaders and to build up in your schools. And one of the questions I ask all my coaches when we talk to them is kind of describe your average day. So I'm curious as to what's the average day for Jamie Casselberg?
Well, I want to come back to the idea of coaching versus teaching. We can come back to that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because I think it's an important topic. So my typical day, it always depends. So typically, I'm spending most of my time on the road. I travel 200,000 miles. So this week, I started Sunday. I left to go to Detroit, and I was in Detroit on Monday, and then I had to go back to Phoenix to sit on a workforce development panel in Phoenix on Tuesday. Flew out here yesterday for this, and flying back tonight to Phoenix to keynote the Librarian Association conference tomorrow.
Cool.
And then Friday going to go yell at superintendents in LA for the day, right? So that's not a typical week, but I've had lots of those kinds of weeks where you have no idea where you are.
Right. It's 5 cities, 5 days.
Yeah, and I spend most of my time just trying to catch up to things, right? Trying to catch up to emails or trying to catch up to things. And I like to write a lot, so I try to use airplane time to write. Typical day at home is literally catching up to everything, because I spend so much time on the road that when I'm home, I do all my meetings, I catch up on, like, if you look at my desk is covered with research and books and things that I've been reading, and, you know, where your good ideas come from,
right,
from the stuff that you read. So
yes.
I try to spend as much time reading as I can. And then I teach classes.
Yeah. And then you got these.
And then I teach.
You got these 10th graders that, do they kind of understand the, do they know who you are? Are they kind of...
Yeah, well, so I'm one of the founders of the school, so they get that. And they're starting to get to know me. And, you know, I like to tell people that I'm in the limited experience I had in K-12 of teaching, I'm equating it to golf. And this is what I mean by that, which is I'm terrible at golf. And you go play golf, and you can be terrible all day, and you hit just one shot that hits the middle of the fairway.
That's what you're talking about.
Yes! I'm coming back for this, right? And I've had a couple of those moments teaching where I'm like, I am terrible at this. I'm horrible. And then a kid comes up to you after class like, hey, I'm going to get a lot out of your class. I really appreciate it. Like, yes!
Right?
So it's a lot like that, right? So you have those moments. So they know who I am. I'm sure they've done their research.
Sure.
But I'm trying to be a coach for them, right? Back to that idea.
Right.
It's this idea that I get the question all the time, are, you know, teachers going to be replaced by technology? No,
right.
They're not, ever. Because I think the role of the teacher is even more important in this world that we're building. And the role of the teacher needs to move to this coaching model, right? So I do not like when teachers are described as facilitators, right? Like, I've heard that before. Like, we need to move away from being the whatever under facilitator.
Right.
I have a problem with that word, because I think about a basketball game. Who's a facilitator in a basketball game? It's the referee, right? The referee is facilitating the game. They're making sure that the game goes smoothly. They're calling the plays, the good plays, the bad plays, the whole thing.
Right.
But they don't care who wins. They don't care what the outcome is. They want as neutral as possible.
Hopefully.
The facilitator is a neutral person, right?
Right.
I'm a facilitator. I want a coach. I want the person not playing the game, but being so involved and so engaged in the game that they're also sweating and they're also getting the emotion and the feeling.
Right.
So I think about it, if you think about a basketball game, I think of the teacher as closer to the coach than the referee.
Yeah, that makes a whole lot of sense. Let's stay on the topic of coaching. So I know that Google has recently partnered with Digital Promise in this dynamic learning project. Are you involved in that in any way?
Liz Anderson's the person who's running that team, and I meet with her every couple of weeks. I'll be more involved as it moves on.
Right.
But I have the program has my full support.
Fantastic. So that's recently reached out to Digital Promise as well, because you know that's what we do.
Yeah. Right now they're in a pilot phase, right? They're experimenting to see what. First thing you have to prove is that this is real, right?
Right.
Which is we need people in schools that are good at the use of technology, but more importantly, the good at being able to help teachers integrate the technology into what they do. And if we find that that helps, then we'll expand the program.
Right, absolutely. And I think collecting that data piece is the key thing to it as well.
Right.
Being able to have that data to back it up, to see
what works and what doesn't work.
Absolutely,
right.
Fantastic. I grew up out in Dallas, Texas, and I'm in the process of maybe planning a trip because Dallas Independent Schools is doing a lot of stuff with personalized learning right now.
Okay.
And I've got a childhood friend who's in DISD and got her hands all in that. But my junior high, my eighth grade junior high, is one of the 50 schools that was selected for that project. So I'm hoping to get back and revisit them up in Carrollton Farmers Branch. Let's talk a little about your inquiry-driven, project-based model. You talk a lot about that. How does that fit into personalized learning, and what is the coach's role, if you will, if it's teacher as coach? How does the coach fit into that model? And how does that look different from, you know, if we were to walk into a classroom today where a teacher says, you know, we're doing a project-based, you know, how do you see that as being different?
Yeah, so look, I like that we're talking about personalized learning. I want us to get to personal learning. Right? Personalized learning can sometimes still mean I take this great content and I figure out how to deliver it to you. Where personal learning is, there's these ideas that I want you to learn, but I'm going to let you drive the learning.
Right?
I'm going to let you figure out what you're interested in. Right?
Sure.
So, that's one of the things that we're doing with the communication class, right? I said bring a great presentation in to demonstrate a great presentation. I didn't give them any the parameters. I didn't tell them anything. I just told them to find what they thought good presenters were. Some people brought in comedians. Some people brought in singers and poetry readers, right? Like this idea that it's personal to them, that they're gonna learn from something that they can relate to, that maybe culturally significant, right? That's an issue that we don't really talk a lot about.
Right.
So I want us to move more to that. So to me, you know, inquiry-based learning is trial as close to being 3 years old as possible, right? That's really like there's nobody who drives learning more than a little kid, right?
Right.
She's like, you are, she's always asking questions. She's always doing things. She's always like curious about what's going on. And I want kids to continuously have that, because at the end of the day, that curiosity is what is going to be an important skill to have in the future.
Right. So what are the, I like what you said about that. We've actually, I think one of the things that needs to happen is a common vocabulary, and a common syntax. You know, I think your definition or your description of personal learning sounds very similar to how we at iTeach describe or define personalized learning. We're very I think a common syntax.
But if you walk around this and you see what personalized learning is, that's not the same.
There's 50 different definitions of it. You're absolutely right. We're working hard on trying to marry the syntax so that it fits. So that when I say it, and you say it, and they say it, we all know that we're saying the same things.
Well, personalized learning is still content to student. Student-driven learning is student to content, I think. That could be an interesting way of doing it, right?
We definitely describe it as student-driven. We're definitely a student-driven agency, is what we're looking for. So what has to happen? Because a lot of what we're looking at these days are policies, whether they're local, state, or national, and kind of barriers to making, you know, personal learning, personalized learning, to making these things happen. You know, a lot of what are we testing? You know, we've got this triangle of assessment that are, you know, we're teaching the test, and We say we want to teach one thing, but we're testing a different thing.
Okay.
What are you doing, or what is Google doing at a local, state, or even national level to kind of drive that conversation and that change at those levels?
Well, I think it's an important topic because, well, the best I think that Google can do is to provide the tools and the platforms to do what, to give teachers the opportunity to do what they want, right?
Right.
You can argue all you want for personal learning, you can argue all you want for A, B, and C, but if you don't have the platform or you don't have the tools to do that, it's hard to do. So at the very least, what we can do is provide the opportunity and the platform to do that. What I'm personally doing is having that same argument, right? Which is, when I talk to a governor, for example, we'll ask him, if he's telling me about an education program, I'll ask him, how does this benefit the student? Like, what's in it for the student?
Right.
And we can all be asking that question on a policy level. Most of the things that you just mentioned aren't for students at all, it's for adults.
Right.
Standardized testing is not for students.
Right.
Students aren't testing feedback and doing something with it.
Correct.
We're using that data for something else.
Yeah.
So, it's not that I don't believe in standardized testing, I just don't believe that that's the methodology we should use for students, right? Students need a different kind of assessment. So I can yell at that. So I was in a meeting or this workforce development thing yelling about just that. That at the end of the day, it's about policies that we need to change to give teachers the space and the room to do the things that they really want to do. On Friday, it's the superintendent summit, and I'm going to go yell at them about making sure, because what they control is the space that you guys get, right? The space that teachers get to do things the way they want to do things. And my argument is going to be this. I have worked at Google for 12 years. Before Google, I was at Accenture, where I worked for 7 years, and I worked in banking. And before that, I was at worked for Governor Cuomo in New York. So I worked in government, banking, finance, healthcare, electronics and high tech, education. So I worked across all these different workforces.
Right.
And there is no more passionate and dedicated workforce than teachers.
Right.
Period. It's not, second isn't even close.
Amen.
Right? Like firefighters would be second, right? Like there's no one more passionate about what they do than teachers. Nobody in the finance world cries when they talk about their work.
Right.
Right? I have friends who complain about forgetting to charge in their $6 coffee while teachers are spending $1,500 out of their own pocket to buy crayons, right?
Like, right.
Let's let them loose.
Right.
Let's not tell them what to do. Let's let them tell us what to do, right? Let's give them the opportunity to open them up. So it's part of it is a communication issue. Part of it is an awareness issue. Like, there is no more dedicated group. What happens if we open up the space for them to say, okay, what do you want to do? How do you want to do this? And what did we do to support you and help you?
That's right. That's fantastic. I love that you said that testing is for parents. When I was...
It's for adults.
But the biggest pushback I got in the classroom when I tried new and innovative things were parents who didn't understand, right? That age old, that's not how we did it.
Sure.
When I was in school.
At the Phoenix Coding Academy, we're trying a non-grade system, right? And parents are like, I don't understand what meets expectations means. Does that mean a B? Like, they want to know the letter grade.
Right.
But that's the old world.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That's brilliant. We definitely talk about that in our vision of personalized learning as well, multi-age.
So what I say to parents is, what grade did you get in your job performance last year?
Right.
Like, what are you talking about? No, you got an assessment. You got...
Right. Here's the things you do really well. Here's what you need to improve upon.
Yeah. Why don't we do the same thing with kids? Yeah. That's what I tell parents.
And you work with people who have 10 years more experience than you and who have 10 years less experience than you.
Right. And you seem to be okay.
Yeah. It works well.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. All right, so you mentioned that you're reading a lot. Books all over you. So what are you reading today? You got a favorite or a...
So I read a lot of... So I, on my list right now, as we go into the holiday season, because this is what I like to read, is I haven't read The End of Average yet. I want to read that.
Okay.
That's a really good book.
The End of Average.
The End of Average is a really good book. I'm lucky enough that Daniel Pink said he's going to send me his new book, an advanced copy of it, so I'm looking forward to that. I'm also reading Al Franken's book, The Great Senator. I forget what it's called, but I'm a big Al Franken fan, so I'm reading his book. And then the book that I'm really looking forward to is Dan Brown's new book. I almost never read fiction.
Yeah.
the Originals, I think it's called. Or not the Originals. The Origin, I think it's called.
Is he the Da Vinci Code?
Yeah, yeah. So I read those books too. And so I'm looking. So that's the like hangout book. Sitting on the couch. Yeah.
Fantastic. So I've got a good friend who works for Franken.
Oh really?
Up in D.C. She's a. I don't even know, Julie. You'll kill me if you're listening to this. I can't think of what it is you do, but she's.
She's probably told you a thousand times.
Yeah, she's a. She's a former. I taught high school with her here in North Atlanta.
All right.
She moved to D.C., finished her doctorate, taught some college things around here and there, and is doing policy stuff.
I think he's awesome
for Franken in D.C.
I think he's a great model. Like you take someone who used to be a comedian. And what he did for 6 years is he shut that down and became serious.
Yeah.
And there's no one that shows you the benefit of preparing, reading, and being ready and listening. Like, and the reason why he gets to ask the questions that he asks and he gets to catch people in this is because he's actually listening to people.
Right.
He's actually listening to your answer. He doesn't have his answer yet. He's going to react to whatever you say. Yeah. Nobody does it better than him.
Yeah. It's fantastic.
I'm a big fan of his.
Fantastic. Well, Jamie, I know you're a busy man. I don't want to take all your time. I really appreciate you sitting down with us today.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming to the conference. We're glad you're here.
Yeah, it's good. I'm going to walk around the exhibit hall, see what's
fantastic.
Here.
Thank you so very much. Jamie Cassip, everybody. He's on Twitter. He's all over everywhere. Reach out and say hey.
On an airplane. Find me on an airplane.
Thanks, all.
Education 3.0 is produced by the instructional coaches from iTeach at Kennesaw State University. You can reach out to them for more information, questions, or comments at their website, www.ksuiteach.org, or on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.